I didn't know anyone had called the department. I'd never heard of Becky Watson until I met Janie in the hospital. I swear. He leaned so close our heads nearly touched, the smell of stale coffee on his breath. Then what happened? Who dropped the ball? Because it says right here that you were assigned to do the visit. I didn't know about any of this. Stop! He slammed his fist on the table. I jumped. Allison might be alive today if you'd done your job the way it was supposed to be done. My voice shook. I had no idea Becky contacted the department. Nobody ever said anything. I was never assigned to do a home visit, but that doesn't mean I'm not responsible. Tears spilled over, and once they had started, I couldn't hold them back. You don't understand. The Department of Children's Services gets so many calls every day. Parents, teachers, friends, police, even elderly people who are just bored and have nothing to do with their time. We are so short-staffed, it's impossible to handle every complaint that comes across our desks. So we prioritize. Claire weeds through the complaints and handles my schedule. I struggled to speak. Becky Watson's case never made my list. How is it possible that something like this never made your list? Was he serious? Didn't he know how broken our department was? The Department of Children's Services is a revolving door. The same files come across our desks again and again. We see the same faces, meet the same families. We take one child out of the home and are forced to leave the other children behind, or send children back to the families that abused them in the first place. I've been called to investigate abuse in foster homes almost as much as birth parent homes. We have to operate within the system. Every social worker knows it's broken, but it's the only one we have, so we have to make do with it. Luke raised his eyebrows. So you're saying you failed, Becky? I'm saying the system failed them both. We'd failed all of them. Christopher was never going to be the same again after he heard this. He had to believe that children were born good and pure, that no child was beyond repair, in order for his world to make sense. This would shatter his core belief. What will you tell the Bowers? I asked. It went without saying that they had to know. I couldn't begin to imagine how this would change things. Ron didn't need time to think about his answer. This was what he'd been waiting for all day. The only thing I can tell them, the truth. Their daughter is a killer, and until she's an adult, they're responsible for making sure she doesn't hurt another human being. When? When what? I cleared my throat. When will you tell them? Ron glanced at his watch. It's too late now, but we'll be there first thing tomorrow morning.
Can I come with you?
He frowned. I'm not sure that's a good idea. Look, if I wanted to, I could go over there tonight and tell them myself. I'm not on the case anymore, and I already told you that we're more like family than anything else now. So I'm doing you a favor by waiting to go with you in the morning. I did my best to sound threatening. I couldn't bear the thought of Christopher hearing the news without someone to support him. Hannah was barely hanging on herself, and she would be relieved. Elaine had confided in me that Hannah had spoken with her about relinquishing her parental rights and rehoming Janie. I hated the term because it made children sound like pets, but there were instances where the state allowed adopted children to be returned to foster care. There was no doubt in my mind Hannah would push for that now. And I didn't blame her. Unlike Christopher, I knew there were children who were too damaged to be fixed. It was an awful fact of life and my job, but that didn't make it any less true. You couldn't fix what Janie had, but he would spend his life trying. That much I knew for sure, and he would do it alone unless I was there for him. Luke folded his hands on the table. You should know that Greg's attorneys have filed a civil lawsuit against the Department of Children's Services. He paused, letting his words sink in before continuing. You should be aware that you are named in that suit. He exchanged a look with Ron, then turned his attention back to me. I don't care, I said. They needed a friend. The charges against them had made their situation public, and people were avoiding them like everyone avoided tragedy, afraid they'd catch it if they got too close. They exchanged another look. Ron nodded before Luke spoke. Meet us here at 8 tomorrow.
61. Hannah Bauer. The toilet flushed, signaling Christopher was awake. His feet plodded down the hallway, and he grabbed a cup of coffee before joining us in the living room. He stood behind the couch. How'd you sleep last night? He asked, like he'd done every morning since I'd been home. Good, I lied. He'd worry too much if I told him the truth. No matter how hard he tried to hide his worry for my sake, deep lines of it were carved in his forehead. I hated what Greg's charges had done to him. The case had stripped every shred of confidence he'd had left. He planted a kiss on my forehead. Can I take him? I nodded. He scooped coal from me tenderly, and I struggled with the emotions in my throat. Sometimes his kindness hurt too much. I wanted him to hate me. That's what I deserved. Christopher held him up, and Cole cooed, his eyes dancing with joy. He added new sounds every day. We both grinned as he babbled. I burst out laughing when he blew a spit bubble, then was immediately swallowed up by guilt because happiness felt like a betrayal to Allison. Mom kept telling me we needed to give it time, but time wouldn't heal this wound. I'd miss Allison just as much in 10 years as I did today, but time would move forward regardless of our loss. That much was a given, and Cole would be the force pulling us along. He was the reason we got up in the morning. For now, that was enough. It had to be. Christopher and I didn't speak about how hard things were, but we didn't speak about much these days. Our suffering was too big for words, but it was better that way. I preferred it over the clichés we got from other people. One of my co-workers had sent me a card that said you needed to find beauty in the broken. I wanted there to be beauty, but I could only see broken. He laid coal on his lap. The two of them fit together perfectly. Cole favored him more every day. Their lips even turned up the same way when they smiled. Christopher tickled Cole's stomach until he squealed with laughter. My heart swelled with love for them. This is how it was supposed to be. Me, Christopher, and our baby. I pushed the thoughts away. Thoughts like that only destroyed me. I didn't need any therapist to tell me that. Do you want to take a walk after breakfast? He asked. I nodded. Our walks were new. We'd only started them last week. I hadn't been able to hide my panic attacks from him for long, and he'd quickly learned to recognize the signs. I'd balked when he'd suggested going for a walk on the brink of one of my attacks, as my biggest fear was having an accident in public because I couldn't get to a bathroom in time, but he'd promised me we would only go around the block. I had started feeling better by the time we'd been at the end of the sidewalk, so we'd just kept going. We worked them into our day as often as we could, and our first one was after breakfast. We rarely spoke, but something about the outdoors made it okay, even when it felt suffocating in the house. Yesterday, we'd walked 2 miles without saying a word. Cole was happiest when we walked. Christopher strapped him to his chest in the baby Bjorn, facing him forward because he liked to see what was happening. Once we'd walked in the direction of the park and had run into a few mothers who had recognized us. We hadn't made that mistake again. All our miles were in the opposite direction of the park. We'd gotten to pass through neighborhoods we'd never been in before. Cole stirred in Christopher's lap, and I let out the breath I hadn't realized I was holding. I leaned close and inhaled the smell of his vanilla mint baby shampoo. I would get through this for him. I had to. I made myself concentrate on what Christopher was saying, doing more than nodding my head at the appropriate time and faking interest like I did most days. He was in the middle of telling me about Janie's new social worker, Elaine.
I can already tell I'm not going to like Elaine. And I'm not just saying that because she's not Piper.
He took another sip of his coffee, pausing to nuzzle against Cole's cheek. We both knew it wasn't true. No one would measure up to Piper. She'd taken the time yesterday to check on me, even though I should have been the one calling to support her, since she was the one on her way to be grilled by the private investigator, Ron. He'd interviewed Christopher, too, and Christopher had said it was more intense than the medical malpractice deposition he'd been part of a few years earlier. Neither of us had heard from her last night. I had no idea if it meant things had gone well or terribly wrong. My appointment with Ron was next week. I would be happy when this entire thing was over. Greg wouldn't let me near my nephews, and I missed them terribly. My heart ached, especially since I knew Allison would have been furious with him, because she would have thought this entire lawsuit was a joke, too. If the roles had been reversed, she never would have done something like this. Ever. But I wasn't mad at Greg. He was in unimaginable pain and not thinking straight. I wanted to be there for him. Christopher felt the same way. He'd told me he wanted to take Greg out for a beer and just let him talk until he ran out of words, or sit in silence until the sun came up. He'd almost called Greg the other night, but our lawyer had told him he had to wait until all the paperwork was finalized.
"I'm ready for another cup," he said. "Do you want me to fill up yours too?"
"Yes, please," I said, instantly mad that I'd said please. I was working hard at not sounding so formal. He handed me Cole and headed into the kitchen with our mugs. I laid Cole on my lap just like he'd been on Christopher's, since it was one of his favorite positions. He smiled up at me when I looked down, and I beamed back. I never got tired of looking into his sweet face. "Hi, little buddy," I said, taking one of his hands in mine. He wrapped his fingers around mine and tried to pull himself up.
"Mama, mama,"
Cole cooed. Christopher raced in from the kitchen.
"Did he just say mama?"
he asked. I leaned down and Cole patted my cheeks with both hands.
"Mama, mama."
Of course he wasn't saying mama. He was too young. They were just sounds. But it sounded like it. And there would come a day when he would say mama in reference to me. He would say daddy, too. I let the tears fall down my cheeks. I looked at Christopher. His eyes were wet as well. The doorbell rang, interrupting our moment. I looked at the clock above the fireplace. 8:10. I glanced at Christopher. He shrugged.
"Do you want me to get it?"
he asked. "Let's see who it is first," I said. I peeled back a corner of the curtain and peeked out the window.
"Who is it?"
Christopher whispered. "It's Piper," I said. "And the police are with her."
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of The Perfect Child by Lucinda Barry, performed by Christine Williams, Aaron Bennett, and Dan John Miller. Performance copyright 2018 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.